A reading from Matthew 26. Then Jesus went with them to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." And taking with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, "My soul is very sorrowful, even to death. Remain here and watch with me." And going a little farther, he fell on his face and prayed, saying, "My Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will." And he came to the disciples and found them sleeping. And he said to Peter, "So, could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit is indeed willing, but the flesh is weak." Again, for the second time, he went away and prayed, "My Father, if this cannot pass unless I drink it, your will be done." And again, he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were heavy. So, leaving them again, he went away and prayed for a third time, saying the same words again. And he came to the disciples and said to them, "Sleep and take your rest later on. See, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Watch. The time has arrived. Stand watch while Jesus prays. For so long in this journey, you have been told to be prepared. Many parables told you that the time would come, and it would come in an instant. So be ready. Stand watch. Be prepared. The time is now." Our Lord Jesus heads off to pray. He knows that the time has come. He has been saying for quite a while now that the Son of Man will die, will be betrayed. He sees his death is near. We see much of Jesus' humanity here. He doesn't want to die. He doesn't want to suffer. But yet in his perfection, he knows that the Father's will must be done. Yet he asks 3 times that this would be taken from him. But it is not granted. The Son of Man must die. Be ready. Be prepared. But the disciples are failing. Jesus has taught them and led them, but they cannot even stand watch. Truly, though, none of us are prepared. We are mocked from the outside as those who celebrate a brutal death. By calling this day good, many call us fools. There's nothing good about this day. But to us, it is very good. For we who are like the disciples, we cannot seem to follow the commands of God. But we continually fail. We cannot even keep watch ourselves. But yet this is why the responsibility does not pass from Jesus. He is the only one who can take our place. He is the only one who can pay the price. And this is the will of the Father. Another reading from Matthew 26. While he was still speaking, Judas came, one of the 12, and with him a great crowd with swords and clubs from the chief priests and the elders of the people. Now the betrayer had given them a sign, saying, "The one I will kiss is the man. Seize him." And he came up to Jesus at once and said, "Greetings, Rabbi," and he kissed him. Jesus said to him, "Friend, do what you came to do." Then they came up and laid hands on Jesus and seized him. And behold, one of those who were with Jesus stretched out his hand, and drew his sword, and struck the servant of the high priest and cut off his ear. Then Jesus said to him, "Put your sword back into its place, for all who take the sword will perish by the sword. Do you think that I cannot appeal to my Father, and he will at once send me more than 12 legions of angels? But how then should the scriptures be fulfilled, that it must be so?" At that hour, Jesus said to the crowds, "Have you come out as against a robber with swords and clubs to capture me? Day after day I sat in the temple teaching, and you did not seize me. But all this has taken place that the scriptures of the prophets might be fulfilled. Then all the disciples left him and fled. Soon after Jesus prays, he gets his answer from the Father. Now he must be betrayed by one of his own. Earlier, not more than 24 hours, he was sitting and eating with his disciples. He knew that one who was eating with him at that time would betray him. And now is the time for that to come true. Judas has led a group to betray him and arrest him. And as they try to take him, a disciple attacks. But Jesus chastises him. He is being taken willingly into custody. He chastises that disciple and is arrested, saying that this is all happening to fulfill the word of God, the words spoken about this very event. They do not come to arrest him in public, but in a dark garden. And truly, as we reflect on this, darkness surrounds all of this. The darkness of night, the darkness of the mind, as no one seems to understand what is happening here. But Jesus knows. He knows that he must go through all of these things to fulfill Scripture. And those words are numerous, but they all point to one thing. God hates sin. And he has prepared a solution to sin by sending his very own Son to pay the price. But the love of God is hidden here. All we see is hatred and betrayal. We see the suffering of the disciples. But yet Jesus, in the midst of all of this, is full of love. Love for all people. Love for those who betray him. Love for those who beat him. A love unknown. We continue in our reading from Matthew 26. Then those who had seized Jesus led him to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the scribes and the elders had gathered. And Peter was following him at a distance, as far as the courtyard of the high priest. And going inside, he sat with the guards to see the end. Now the chief priests and the whole council were seeking false testimony against Jesus, that they might put him to death. But they found none, though many false witnesses came forward. At last two came forward and said, "This man said, 'I am able to destroy the temple of God and to rebuild it in 3 days.'" And the high priest stood up and said, "Have you no answer to make? What is it that these men testify against you?" But Jesus remained silent. The high priest said to him, "I adjure you by the living God, tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God." Jesus said to him, "You have said so. But I tell you, from now on you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of power and coming on the clouds of heaven." Then the high priest tore his robes and said, "He has uttered blasphemy. What further witnesses do we need? You have now heard his blasphemy. What is your judgment?" They answered, "He deserves death." Then they spit in his face and struck him. And some slapped him, saying, "Prophesy to us, you Christ, who is it that struck you?" And now Peter was sitting outside in the courtyard, and a servant girl came up to him and said, "You also were with Jesus the Galilean." But he denied it before them all, saying, "I do not know what you mean." And when he went out to the entrance, another servant girl saw him, and she said to the bystanders, "This man was with Jesus of Nazareth." And again he denied it with an oath, "I do not know the man." After a little while, the bystanders came up and said to Peter, "Certainly you too are one of them, for your accent betrays you." Then he began to evoke a curse on himself and to swear, "I do not know the man." And immediately the rooster crowed. And Peter remembered the saying of Jesus, "Before the rooster crows, you will deny me 3 times. And he went out and wept bitterly. While the other disciples flee, Peter follows Jesus as he is led before the Jewish leadership. Many false witnesses are before this man trying to accuse him, but he remains innocent. But yet our focus is drawn to a cold courtyard where Peter sits. He is asked three times if he is a disciple of Jesus, and each time he denies it. He denies it outright, saying that he does not know the man. But yet when a rooster crows, he remembers. He remembers that Jesus had told him that he would deny him and betray him. And Peter crumbles. But it is not just Peter who denies Jesus. In the history of the Jews, they have continually been told that the Messiah would come and he would save them. And he stands before them now, even at their own admission. But they deny him. They beat him. They mock him. They smack him, saying, "Prophesy to us, you Christ." They call him Christ, they call him Messiah, but they deny his salvation and condemn him to death. But Jesus is here for those who even deny him. He is here to redeem them, to forgive them. He is here to make new the hearts of these who mock him, who strike him, who spit in his face. In Jesus, there is forgiveness, life, and salvation, the very love of God given for the world. Now a reading from Matthew 27. When morning came, all the chief priests and the elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. And they bound him and led him away and delivered him over to Pilate the governor. Then, when Judas, his betrayer, saw that Jesus was condemned, he changed his mind and brought back the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and the elders, saying, "I have sinned by betraying innocent blood." They said, "What is that to us? See to it yourself." Throwing down the pieces of silver into the temple, he departed, and he went and hanged himself. Jesus is judged. Jesus is condemned. And as Judas sees this, he realizes what he has done. "I have sinned by betraying innocent blood." But the people have nothing to do with him. And this guilt breaks him. It breaks him to the point of suicide. There is no joy in this story. We do not celebrate the death of Judas. His guilt throws him into the pits of despair, and he kills himself. We want redemption for Judas. We get to see later that Peter is redeemed, that as Peter denied Jesus, he gets to be forgiven. We see joy in that redemption. But in Judas, the guilt is just too much. But yet, this whole situation is happening because of guilt. The guilt of Judas betrays Jesus. The guilt of Peter denies Jesus. But our guilt of our sin condemns Jesus. We point the blame at Judas for betraying Jesus. But it is we who sent Jesus to death. We say, "Peter, how could you? I would never deny Jesus like that." But we too are guilty of denying Jesus. But this is why Jesus died for us. This is why he goes to the cross for us. He takes upon himself our guilt and our shame and our sin. He is the guilty one. He is the innocent one who becomes the guilty one, and we who are guilty become innocent. And in this blood sacrifice of the innocent Jesus, the price for our guilt is paid. A reading now from Luke chapter 23. And Herod and Pilate became friends with each other that very day, for before this they had been at enmity with each other. Pilate then called together the chief priests and the rulers and the people and said to them, "You brought me this man as one who was misleading the people. And after examining him before you, behold, I did not find this man guilty of any of your charges against him. Neither did Herod, for he sent him back to us. Look, nothing deserving death has been done by him. I will therefore punish and release him." But they all cried out together, "Away with this man and release to us Barabbas, a man who had been thrown into prison for an insurrection started in the city and for murder." Pilate addressed them once more, desiring to release Jesus. But they kept shouting, "Crucify, crucify him." A third time he said to them, "Why? What evil has he done? I have found in him no guilt deserving death. I will therefore punish and release him." But they were urgent, demanding with loud cries that he should be crucified. And their voices prevailed. So Pilate decided that their demand should be granted. He released the man who had been thrown into prison for insurrection and murder, for whom they asked, but he delivered Jesus over to their will. Two men judge Jesus, two men who are very qualified. These two men have had rebels brought before them continually. These two men are the ones who condemn burglars, thieves, and murderers. These two men are adept and capable judges. And they find Jesus innocent. They find no fault. As we have just sung, "Oh, dearest Jesus, what law have you broken?" But yet the crowds shout, "Guilt. Crucify him, crucify him." Before them, he is not guilty. How is this possible? How can this be? How can they be so blind? And even in their custom to release somebody who is in captivity, they take the insurrectionist and murderer over Jesus. What is going on? But yet we see that Pilate would rather obey the crowds than release this innocent man. And he condemns him. He condemns him to be crucified. We look at this situation with utter and complete amazement. This is a mistrial. This is not fair. But Jesus is not here for a fair trial. He's here to be guilty. He is here to take from us that judgment for sin. Jesus is here to be judged in our place. Another reading from Luke. And as they led him away, they seized one Simon of Cyrene, who was coming in from the country, and laid on him the cross to carry it behind Jesus. And there followed him a great multitude of the people and of women who were mourning and lamenting for him. But turning to them, Jesus said, "Daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. For behold, the days are coming when they will say, 'Blessed are the barren, and the wombs that never bore, and the breasts that never nursed.' Then they will begin to say to the mountains, 'Fall on us,' and to the hills, 'Cover us.' For if they do these things when the wood is green, what will happen when it is dry?" Two others who were criminals were led away to be put to death with him. And when they came to the place that is called the Skull, there they crucified him and the criminals, one on his right and one on his left. And Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." And they cast lots to divide his garments. If there was one thing that the Romans excelled at, it was killing. Their execution methods were brutal. In crucifixion, a person is pierced in places where they cannot move. and their rib cages collapsing with their arms raised, and they struggle to breathe. They have a little plank of wood to stand on, which, as they push up on it, will allow them to breathe. There is nothing here but pain. And everyone knows it. Everyone who sees Jesus going to the cross knows what he will suffer. They know how brutal crucifixion is. The daughters of Jerusalem weep at how brutal it is. But Jesus knows what he faces. It's probably going through his head as he carries his cross. But eventually they reach the place of the skull, and Jesus is crucified between two criminals. The painful and barbaric torture that Jesus has only heard about, now he experiences. But the words that come from his mouth are not curses, no words of agony, only words of forgiveness. "Father, forgive them," he shouts. And because he is here, the Father forgives. This is the merciless punishment for sin that is all laid upon Jesus. The pain and torture that is meant for us. The agony he feels, he experiences for us. And when he says, "Father, forgive them," the words echo through the ages as the Father forgives all, because of the sacrifice of the Son. Our final reading from Luke chapter 23. One of the criminals who were hanged rallied at him, saying, "Are you not the Christ? Save yourself and us." But the other rebuked him, saying, "Do you not fear God, since you are under the same sentence of condemnation? And we indeed justly, for we are receiving the due reward for our deeds, but this man has done nothing wrong." And he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." And he said to him, "Truly, I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise." It was now about the sixth hour, and there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour. While the sun's light failed, the curtain of the temple was torn in two. Then Jesus, calling out with a loud voice, said, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." And having said this, he breathed his last. Now when the centurion saw what had taken place, he praised God, saying, "Certainly this man was innocent." It has been agonizing hours since Jesus and the two criminals were nailed to those cursed trees. The pain is unreal, unlike anything. One of the criminals calls out for help. He knows who this Jesus is. He is the Christ. Can't he save them? But yet there is a shout from the other. "We deserve this. He does not." All we keep hearing, all we keep seeing is how innocent this Jesus is. Why is he here? But yet, because he is here, paradise is here. It's odd to think of paradise in the midst of such torture. But Jesus tells this man crucified next to him that he will be with him in paradise. And in an odd yet very divine way, paradise is here. As Jesus breathes his last breath, as Jesus commends himself to the Father, there is paradise. Here is Jesus in our place. Here is our forgiveness. Here is our price paid. Here is our salvation. Here is paradise. And after giving everything, Jesus dies. And the final word that we hear from a Roman centurion, "Certainly this man was innocent."